This is Emily Wright, features and global editor of EG, and I'm speaking today to Greg Williams, editor of Wired. He'll be joining us next month at MIPIM UK, where he'll be delivering a keynote on digital trends that are transforming the world, which is a big old topic. Hi, Greg, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Emily?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm good.
Good.
So before we get on to talking about prop tech a bit more specifically, you know, you're at a brand where the whole focus has been on the future trends, technology. So from your perspective, how rapid and exponential would you say the leaps forward that we are seeing currently in technology are compared to what we've seen historically?
Right. Well, that's a great question, because I think that technology obviously is moving forward very quickly at a rapid pace, and there's an argument, well, not even an argument, there's clear evidence that we are probably, you know, only going to accelerate forward because of Moore's Law, as long as we can kind of overcome the kind of physical limits of transistors, which many large corporations are working on doing. I think that probably the relationship between kind of bits and bytes is getting much more complicated, and what that means is that you know, the world is taking on this sort of digital layer. So everything really, our homes, our jobs, our cars, and increasingly, of course, our bodies are connected to the net in real time on this kind of really highly individualized basis. And I think that what we're seeing at the moment is this kind of convergence of a number of different technologies that just a few years ago maybe were kind of very sort of distinct, maybe, if that's the right word, all kind of coming together. So we're seeing things like, for instance, the useless phrase, the Internet of Things, and really I think the better way to describe that is just sensors, right? So sensors are going to be attached to pretty much everything that we want them to be attached to. So whether that's, you know, cutlery to monitor our health, or whether that's buildings to monitor air quality, or, you know, rubbish bins to see when they need filling or not, emptying or not. Mm. And that kind of technology then will sort of feed into some of the others that we're looking at. Obviously, things like big data, which is, again, not a particularly helpful term, but just these vast quantities of data that obviously human beings cannot process, so we need machines to do that. And machines increasingly, with technologies like artificial intelligence and quantum computing eventually, which probably will be with us at some point in the next, I don't know, decade maybe, that means that we will be able to sort of process that much more information. We will have machines that are far more intelligent and can give us answers much more quickly and can solve more problems for us. There's definite kind of acceleration going on. And I think that clearly, it's very hard to make anyone who tells you they know what's going to happen in 10 years is probably, I'm not sure if they're really sort of being completely honest, because most of the people who are in these areas who are doing the actual research, so, you know, the artificial intelligence companies, the large organizations that are all over the world that are working on quantum, they don't really know exactly what we're going to be doing in 10 years. But there are kind of very clearly what, you know, Kevin Kelly, the futurist, describes as kind of inevitable trends. So trends like, you know, augmented reality, trends like AI, trends like just this, you know, the internet basically becoming this kind of massively, the world's biggest kind of copying machine. So all these trends will continue. Where they'll go, we don't know, because I think that what's interesting always about technology is that quite often, you know, we don't know quite how it's going to be deployed in the real world. So to explain what I mean, so we have drones now. So drones used to be really just the provenance of the military, right? So only the military had these things that were flying around in our skies. Today, you know, any one of us can purchase one for two or three hundred
quid. Yeah, someone in our office purchased one and then said, "Ooh, that wasn't on my roadmap for the day."
Right, so, okay, so you can think of all kinds of uses for drones, right, so they can see things from above, so you can think of uses in agriculture and city planning and urban planning, that kind of thing. But what you probably couldn't have predicted was that some people would attach cameras to them, race them around warehouses, racing against each other, form these kind of little leagues, film it all, upload all the footage to YouTube, and then sort of... hundreds and thousands of people would start watching these videos. It's sort of that wasn't one of the use cases I imagine that the people who developed drones were thinking about, but that's how some people have ended up using them. So I think there's that kind of parallel that people always kind of use of Thomas Edison when he first invented the phonograph. Initially, when he invented it, he thought, okay, this would be really useful for people to record their kind of like their last thoughts, their sort of dying thoughts. That was his first use case for the phonograph. The second was, oh, this would be great because we can record sermons, because then people can come home from work in the evening and listen to a sermon. And it wasn't until kind of, further down the list that he kind of thought, well, actually, we can record music as well. So it's always hard to know when we deploy a technology exactly how it will be used, and I think that's the same for everything that we're seeing, in development at the moment.
And is the future something that people feel sort of more or less comfortable with now than they have in the past, do you think? Because, like you say, things are changing very quickly, sort of exponentially quickly.
Yeah.
And as is the case with so much technology, you know it's coming, and you see in what you described as these inevitable trends, but you're not 100% sure how it's going to impact. So from your perspective and, being part of Wired and being plugged into all of this, what's the kind of response to it all?
That's a really good question. I think that clearly technology... Well, there's two things. I guess where I would start with is when people say, oh, but technology is causing kind of some problems. I would say absolutely that's true. I also think that there's kind of a caveat to that, which is it's inevitably going to cause problems because all technology is in some instances a kind of a reflection of everything else, right, in society. So some people will spread fake news. That doesn't mean to say that all social media is bad. And I think that what happens is that when one thing bad happens, and fake news is clearly very bad and is, in my opinion, kind of a real significant threat to, civil society and national debate. But that doesn't mean to say that all social media platforms should be banned. And the other point is to make is, the changes are inevitable. Mm. Yeah, you can say, oh, but people are buying vinyl now and paperback sales are up, which is great. Both of those things are terrific. But I don't think that we're never going to go backwards again, right? The only way is forwards. So naturally, the law and legislation will follow technology, and that's kind of only right. You can't kind of have it the other way around. However, and this is my opinion, not necessarily Wired's opinion, I do think that increasingly we are going to need to see some forms of regulation on certain types of technology. We're going to need governments to have a far better grip, because let's face it, the government doesn't have a strong grip on the impact of technology at the moment, especially in the UK, because government is so distracted by other things, or one thing in particular, I should say. Mm. Some of the really significant things that are going on now there's not a significant amount of attention being paid.
What kind of things are you talking about there? So when you say that there needs to be much better attention paid to legislation and what's going on around technology,
Privacy. I mean, GDPR is going to come in next year. I think that consumers having more power over their data is a really good thing. I think that we need to make large technology companies that are the gatekeepers to the internet, make them sort of accountable for what they do and how they use our data. I think that there needs to be a really important debate around the ethics of AI, which is beginning to happen, and some of the major players in AI are actually the people who are pushing that debate forward. I think that we need to have a really, you know, clear sense of how information is being manipulated, often by, you know, external agencies to the UK and Europe, and we need to address those concerns, because I think it does have a significant effect on sort of toxifying the culture and the national national debate.
So going from, you know, the national debate and the government and technology at large to technology in the property sector and in real estate,
yes.
Prop tech. So the real estate, and we talked earlier about, you know, change and the future and whether people feel comfortable. So the real estate sector has been accused, really, I suppose, of being quite slow to adopt. Actually, recently, though, there's been a bit of a backlash against that from some of the startups, not necessarily from the property guys. The startups saying, well, hang on a minute, you know, we've really got to support the industry into changing rather than sort of chastising it and patronising it. But real estate is a traditional sector. You know, there's an awful lot of exciting stuff happening in the prop tech sphere now, but it has been slow to adopt. So it's around that theme in general, adoption and adoption speed, how important would you say it is for an industry to, you know, once they realise and once it becomes clear that the only way is forward, you know,
yeah.
How important is it to adopt that technology?
I think it's really important, and you know, as we were saying earlier on, I think that that kind of that coming together of the physical and virtual world is happening. It's happening kind of quite rapidly with things like sensors, but I also think that there are really significant shifts going on in the way that people are working, and this isn't. So I remember, I'm old enough to remember kind of like the end of the last century, because that makes it sound like a long time ago. At the end of the last century, when people were talking, everyone was talking about, you know, everyone would want to work from home and telecommuting and the paperless office. That clearly hasn't happened, right? People do want to go and collaborate and be in social environments. People like office buildings, for instance, if that's kind of, you know, to take one example. And if you look at kind of trends, increasingly people are going to be sort of sole traders. They're not necessarily going to be employed by large organizations any longer. So we are going to see kind of this growth clearly in kind of co-working, co-living spaces, because that just reflects the trends of, you know, especially kind of, you know, millennials and the generation behind, was that Generation Z, the generation behind them? I lose track. Whichever one that is, the people born after millennials, they want to live in cities. They don't want to kind of run out to the suburbs like their parents did. They're less acquisitive than the boomers or Gen X. They're much more kind of into experiences than they are into actually having stuff. They want, you know, the big trend is obviously about access rather than ownership, and they'd rather be in the centre of things. So something like a kind of like a live workspace makes far more sense to them. If they can kind of have a kind of a base in a thriving kind of city centre with, you know, all the vestiges of, you know, whatever it is, the coffee shops, the health facilities, I think that there's a really interesting kind of trend there around what an office building, for instance, might be. Like, could it be, you know, could it be something where it's effectively like a platform, right? So it's a platform for other services. It's a co-working space, but it's also, you know, a creche and a medical centre and somewhere where you can, I don't know, you can entertain, but also there's a social space where you can meet people. And increasingly, I think that, you know, as those kind of demographic changes sort of take effect, city centres will again, and they are actually, become much, you know, will begin to thrive. And I think maybe we'll see a kind of a very different kind of environment. So city centres won't just be places where people come into to work and then they leave at the end of the evening, or they hang around at restaurants. They'll actually become kind of more dynamic, and that could be a really interesting change.
Here, you know, we look at, you know, we cover prop tech and we look at all the new innovations. You know, that's because, you know, we cover real estate. What's really interesting though is to hear, you know, you talking about the sort of stuff that you're seeing, because obviously you cover tech across the board. So
yeah.
From your perspective and from Wired's perspective, in terms of the sort of things that you're seeing that are really interesting you in terms of prop tech, what kind of stuff is that? Is it sort of the apps, or is it more this kind of change in the city? Is it the way that co-working and this flexible, the need for flexibility is pervading every single aspect of people's lives?
I think, and this is a really kind of glib thing to say, I think anything where there's a really strong use case is going to be successful. So whether that's a way of people, say, investing in property in ways that they've not been able to before, by investing in, you know, property funds easily and quickly through, you know, online services, or whether they can buy a, you know, do a buy-to-let very easily and quickly, not having any of the trouble, that's one thing. But services such as, I was contacted recently by a company, which I'm sure you're aware of, that will take care of absolutely everything if you're moving house. So they'll do your utilities and your Wi-Fi and your post and your, you know, council tax and your removal company. Literally will take all of that from you for a fixed fee and arrange all of that. Again, you know, we're building an economy around services that are kind of simplifying people's lives and offering kind of real value in terms of, you know, for people who are basically sort of time poor. So anything that kind of, you know, works on that level is good. But also, you know, something like, you know, I was talking about co-working and co-living spaces, things like finding office space, a meeting room near you that's free. So you think about, you know, I'm not convinced that the sort of sharing economy necessarily is a sharing economy at all points, but I think that, you know, most office buildings have a lot of space that's not used during the day. I mean, you probably know better than I what the occupancy rates of offices are. I'm sure it's you know, below 80% pretty much everywhere. Why not be able to rent out those offices, you know, a meeting room to someone who's passing and needs to do a quick meeting or a quick call or a video conference, you know, so you can just log on your location and then you'll find there's sort of five or six places near you that are available for rent. So I think that those kind of, anything that allows kind of ease and efficiency will be worth, you know, will be worth thinking about and investing in. Start up.
Touched a little bit actually earlier on the world that we're living in at the moment, which is, you know, a topic of conversation that people, you know, love/hate to talk about at the moment, I think. So in what is a very uncertain world economically and politically at the moment, what value do you think something like technology, which is so global, can bring?
I think the message of tech is that it goes across borders, and it can have kind of, you know, deep impact in ways that maybe we can't even sort of fathom, you know. So, for instance, there was a really good piece I read recently about voice and the importance of voice, and the fact that, you know, as we all know, I'm sure you've played around with, you know, Alexa and experimented with, you know, Siri and Facebook Messenger, Google Assistant. And that kind of that idea of kind of interacting with machines through voice, right? So voice as the interface between man and machine. And the piece was saying that the next billion that are going to come online, and effectively what that means is the next billion that get smartphones, low-cost smartphones, and these are largely people in the developing world who maybe don't have particularly high levels of education. Voice for them is going to be the way they primarily interact with their devices, because services are being built around voice rather than touch. And for them, people maybe who don't necessarily have kind of, you know, the numerical, you know, language skills in order to type or whatever, that's actually incredibly empowering. So technology can have this powerful impact across borders. We can also see it have, you know, an incredibly powerful impact across borders in, you know, particularly negative ways. You know, we have to sort of, you know, there's absolutely no doubt, you know, 18 or however many it was, you know, US intelligence agencies back in January acknowledged that there was an attempt by the Russian Federation to affect the US election. That there's no doubt about this. You know, and that can have obviously kind of hugely detrimental effect and can affect the sort of stability of democracies. So these are big things now, and I think what's really interesting is that a few years ago technology was kind of seen as sort of this thing that is, you know, slightly, you know, peripheral almost. Like it wasn't kind of part of the mainstream. Now, pretty much every time you kind of, you know, turn the news on or look online for an update, a story with some kind of science or tech angle will be kind of the primary kind of focus of the agenda. Whether that is something around privacy or whether that's something around work or whether that's something around sort of security or health. You know, if, I think that the great myth is when we, you know, people have a job with the word digital in front of them. You know, that's sort of like is a nonsense to me, right? So if you're a digital marketing executive, why do you need the digital bit? Because marketing now today is effectively a digital. It's, everything is digital by default now, and I think that's the kind of the message I think is worth kind of conveying is. This is no longer kind of like an add-on, you know, like you have a digital department or you have someone who deals with it. It has to be baked into every kind of process, whether that's, you know, organisationally or strategically or just in day-to-day kind of, you know, in terms of daily operations. It's just what happens and it's the way that we conduct business and we conduct our lives. And I'm all for people unplugging. You know, I think it's great, you know, not to be distracted by things and actually have deep thought and you know, interact with other human beings and with the world, not via digital interfaces. But I think that, you know, the world has sort of moved to a place where digital is prevalent in every aspect of our lives, and that won't change. And we have to figure out ways in which that can be positive, rather than you know have detrimental effect.
Okay, great. And final question then. So this links slightly back to property, which is good for our listeners. So the CEO of one of the biggest and most traditional property firms recently suggested that all staff cancel their subscriptions to the FT and take out one to Wired instead.
So that is fantastic. And whoever that was, he's a very, very smart individual.
So based on that,
Well, I'm an FT reader, shall I say, and I love the FT. So,
oh, there you go.
I'd say both. Yeah, I'd say both.
But based on that, what do you think the future of tech means for in the world of business? You know, not just, I mean, property, yes, but the world of business generally.
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I think that we will find ways of being hugely more efficient than we are at the moment through kind of these emerging technologies. So whether that is something like augmented reality. I don't know if you've played around with augmented reality, I dare say you have, but something like HoloLens, which is a Microsoft product, which just for maybe your listeners who aren't aware, virtual reality is where when you wear goggles and you are fully immersed in that world. You can't see what's going on around you. You can just see what's being served to you on the kind of the screen of the goggles. Augmented reality is when you put something on, a headset or goggles or whatever, however you want to describe them, but actually you see the world around you, but then you're able to sort of layer images on top. So maybe you can see your emails, or maybe you can see a design of something that a colleague sent you, or maybe you can see a spreadsheet, or maybe you can see a game you're playing, or maybe you could see a tennis match on you know that you normally watch on TV. And I think augmented reality is a really interesting proposition because I think it leads to really, you know, enormous opportunities in areas such as medicine and education and design and entertainment, obviously. But also I think there's a real use case there in terms of, you know, work and efficiency. So I'd say that's going to be significant. But most importantly, we're going to start figuring out ways that we can use data and AI and, you know, powerful kind of, you know, algorithms to discover things that we don't know and to solve problems, really hard problems that we've not been able to figure out before. And actually, the real power, I think, of machines will be not necessarily to solve problems, because that's the job of human controllers, but the job of machines will be to figure out the answers to the questions that human beings have, if that makes sense. And that's that's why I'm kind of very optimistic about, you know, there's a lot of kind of doomsayers saying, well, you know, machines are going to take over the world and everything's going to be automated and we're all going to be out of jobs because of the blockchain and because of robots. I think that the human beings will be core still to business, because human beings are the ones that will be the ones asking questions and employing these. And anything that involves empathy or anything that involves creativity will be strong. And it won't necessarily just be in, you know, high-level skilled jobs. It will be in jobs that, you know, whatever, carers, those kinds of jobs. Those will always be things that human beings will be superior at to machines.
Well, I'm sure the empathetic and creative real estate sector will be delighted to hear that. thank you so much for your time. If any of our listeners want to hear more from Greg, then please join us at MIFM UK on the 18th and 19th of October at Olympia, London, where EG will also be out in force. But for now, thank you very much, Greg, for joining us today.
Great. Thank you, Emily. Much appreciated.